alcoholic. Each week, Valley Group talent agents scour the Western Hemisphere for the finest in recovery speakers. To recognize these individuals, we accept nominations for the Outstanding Speaker of the Week award. This week's nominee got sober in Auburn, California on July 26, 1985. She has held service positions in many areas, including GSR, HNI, secretary, sponsorship, and editorial cartoons for Central Office, as well as a volunteer for Fresno Central Office. And her AA motto for today is, one day at a time. So, may I now have the envelope for this week's Speaker of the Week. This is what we've all been waiting for. Okay, this week's winner of Valley Group Speaker of the Week is Mary R. from Visalia.
Never thought I'd get a little Oscar for this. That's funny. My name's Mary. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is July 22nd, 1985. And I've been sober 9,858 days today. I didn't figure that out. Some computer did. I couldn't do it. Let me tell you. I got sober when I was 19 years old. And I just said that because there's a lot of young people's flyers out here, and it's a big deal, people, that I got sober that young, because I haven't had a drink in between getting sober at 19 and standing here with this many days sober. I started drinking at a very young age. I started having sips of my dad's drinks on his lap, probably younger than 9, but my first drunk was at 9. But it was like no big deal in an alcoholic family to have drinks off in an alcoholic family, off your alcoholic parents a drink. In my family, there was a lot of abuse. There was a lot of physical and sexual and emotional abuse. So the only way for me to, when I found the magic of alcohol at 9, it took away that pain, that emotional pain that I was dealing with as a child. And it was magic medicine. And so I had to find creative ways to use it. And since my dad was a great alcoholic, when we had a keg and we had a bar, it was pretty easy to do. And so it was the things to be creative about was like, how do I get this to school? You know, and we had lunch boxes. Those were the cool little metal lunch boxes. I had Snoopy. Snoopy was my guy, you know. And I would put vodka usually, or Kahlua. Kahlua and milkshakes were really good in school. And, you know, vodka and orange juice. And I started doing that in school. And I don't know how I made it through elementary school. And I don't know how I made it through junior high. And I don't know how I made it through high school. But I made it through drunk or on other substances. But I made it looking good by the, just by the, I mean, I graduated with a 1.9 grade point average, so you know I just skated through. So, and I was also very popular with every group. I was like a chameleon. You know, I could fit out with the people that I needed to score from. I was an athlete, so I was very popular in that group. And I was also very popular with the people that I needed to get my cheating notes from. Because that's how I got through school. I cheated, and I was very good at it. So I didn't study for any tests. I just knew how to cheat well. You know, I knew how to get by in school. During school, more traumas happened during school. There were in the Sacramento area, there was a serial rapist in that area, and I happened to be one of his victims, and that was a thing that I didn't start remembering until this year. 27 years later, I'm remembering that. So more shall be revealed. So it's not a fun thing to be remembering in my 27th year of sobriety. On the 22nd, I'll have that. And but you know what? It keeps me coming here. And I got the tools of AA to deal with that. And I haven't once thought about drinking. And that's a big deal. When I got into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a few examples in my family. My my father had gotten sober. My big badass biker brother had gotten sober. And so we have some trickle-down sobriety, and I have some examples of people in AA. And my dad goes, you know, Mary, if you go to this convention with me, you'll be able to pick up on some guys. There'll be some guys there. I'm like, cool, you know. So I went there just with one motive in mind. And I got my first and only big book. I have not got the fourth edition. I still have my third edition. I'm a cold school. I won't give up my only book I've ever had. And I got the book at a convention. And I had to stand up like some of you people did tonight. Who's a newcomer here? In a room full of thousands of people at a conference in Sacramento. Scared the piss out of me. But I did it. And I got my first book. My only book. And from there, I had to go into a treatment program, but wasn't really like a treatment program like Betty Ford or anything like that. It was like hardcore up in Auburn, California, where everybody that was there had just gotten out of Folsom Prison, and I was a little chick that just got out of high school. And a couple of women that just got out of some prison. And it was pretty hardcore. And I felt a little bit out of place. You know, a little preppy chick, soccer girl, and all these hardcore dudes and hardcore women. I didn't feel like I fit in. And I also didn't feel like I fit in because everybody was so damn old. I mean, they were old. God, so old they farted dust. That was my saying then. And I was very angry when I came into AA. I was angry at God. I was angry. I was just angry. And when they said that Lord's Prayer thing, I would get the heck out of meetings. I didn't like that part of AA. I didn't like you guys talking about God. I didn't like it at all. I mean, what does that have to do with staying sober? I didn't like it. This guy sucks. Then, you know what my sponsor said to me? She said, well, you must believe in God because you're so angry at God. And that pissed me off. And, you know, that started my belief system. I was pissed at God. You know what? That's okay. That's how it started. I was angry at God, and that's how my belief system started. And from there, my belief system has grown into something much bigger. But I started working the steps once. It didn't happen overnight. Because it took a while for me to figure out that I was an alcoholic, because the stories I was sharing were so friggin' scary. But then I started listening for the similarities instead of the differences. Because for the first 30 days I was at the program, because I was there for 90 days, I kept looking at these big-ass monster dudes and this huge prison tattoos, and I think, I didn't do that. And I didn't do that myself out the door if I wasn't careful. So my sponsor taught me, you need to listen to their feelings and what it felt like when they did that. And find out if you feel the same way when you did the shit you did. So I started listening to these big, awesome dudes out of Folsom Prison that ended up being my favorite people in AA that saved my life. Out of all those 15 men, no one is alive today. They have all died of relapse. No one's alive. Nobody in my recovery home is alive today. It just breaks my heart. None of the women are alive today. Just me. Only me. I got the message. Their gift to me was their stories and their feelings. Their feelings that I listened to, and I got it. They gave me their gift. They planted the seed. And you know what? They had to die for it, but I'm alive for it. So I challenge everyone in here who's not finding the similarities to please, please find the similarities. That will save your ass in here. A little preachy there, sorry. Got a little serious on me. I'm usually pretty funny. Crack myself up on that one. So don't take yourself so seriously. There's another one on you. So, gotcha. So, I worked with steps pretty fast after that. You know, I found out, you know, I also didn't want to come be an alcoholic because that meant I had to be like my asshole dad. You know, who wanted to be like him? And like that biker brother I had, who wanted to be like him? And I didn't want that. So what I discovered is in the doctor's opinion on page XX1X. I don't know what the number is because I'm not that smart, you know. But I know that in there it talks about the craving. Yeah. You know, and that craving cycle for me. It's almost like, for like, to dummy it up for myself, it's the shame cycle that I go through. When I drink, it's like, I get drunk, I do something pretty damn stupid, and I swear, like I said, puke up, and I'm praying, oh God, I'll never do it again, I'll never do it again, I'll never do it again. And I do all these shameful things, and I pray to God, I'm not going to do it again, please, I'm not going to do it again. And that evening, I'm back at doing it again. That shame doesn't keep me sober. So the shame cycle doesn't work. So I had to break the shame cycle by coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and working the steps. And that shame cycle is the same thing as addiction cycle for me. It kind of goes hand in hand. When I work my first four steps, some of you guys will probably go, she's crazy. I am. I'm a little nuts. Because I was looking at the differences, my first four step was every single person in my recovery home. I had this, every guy that was there, it was, I did all these crazy things. They weren't my stories. Every person was in the friggin' recovery home. It was their stories. I had their shit down. And I went to meet with my sponsor. I go, this isn't me. This is Joe, and this is John, and this is Greg, and this is Jody, and this is Leanne, and this person. I go, this is not my fourth step. I just copied people's stories because I thought they were freaking cool. And I wanted to fit in. You know, I'm 19. I wanted to fit in. I didn't feel like I fit in. And she goes, when do you think you can fit your fourth step? Because your fifth step is due by the next week. Bitch. So I did it. I got my own story. And my own story is very painful, and it wasn't too hard for me to do my own fourth step. And it was like three or four volumes of little binders. And I did my own. I have my own story. Thanks to the cheat sheet of the other people, because their stories helped me learn my own. Their stories of their feelings helped me learn my own. And it was funny when I had to pop up to it. This really isn't my own. I never thought I'd share that in another meeting, but I was at the oldest meeting in California, up in Auburn. It's been around since Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't hold it in anymore. I was there, I was about to share my fifth step, and I'm like, I can't do it, I can't do it, Mama, I can't do it. That's how I felt, and I didn't do it. I had to be honest, because you have to be honest to stay sober. At least I do. What was really interesting for me is that I had a sponsor. I picked her out not because she had a good story or anything. She looked like a teacher. She had like all the books. She had the highlighter pens. And that's it. That's my picture. You know what? She ended up being a very good sponsor. And I had her, and we went through the steps together. And she was good. She was a mess. I mean, I was 19-year-old, very immature. She had to really rail me in. And boy, she deserved the badge of honor to deal with me. And by the time I got to my ninth step, I remember going to a meeting like this and getting my nine-month chip, and I had finished my fifth step. And it was an exhausting night. And I just remember feeling a sense of relief. kind of like, you know, the only way I can describe doing the fourth and fifth step, you know, people dread that step. No, I'm not going to do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. And I was kind of that way, too. And it's kind of like, you'll hate this analogy. If you buy this sticker tape, you'll go, there's that part that's really disgusting in this. It's the only way I can do it. It's kind of like when you're nauseated and you just don't want to throw up. And you put it off, and you're like, oh, I don't want to do it. Then you finally do, and it feels pretty good. You're like, oh, man, I should have done that a long time ago. You know? That's exactly what your step is like. Just don't do it. You know, it's kind of nauseating. You know, you kind of feel like, oh, God, this is sickening. And then you get it out. It feels good. Get it out. Get that sickness out of you. And that's what it is. It's sickness. Get that toxins out of you. So I work the steps with my very first sponsor up in Auburn, California. By the time I moved to Fresno, I was a year sober. When I moved to Sacramento, it was my year birthday, and I went to a young people's meeting in Fresno. And I said, I have a year sober. And they go, prove it. I'm like, how can I prove it? I just moved here. They all looked at me like, liar. Fuckers. They wouldn't give me a chip. I had to go back to Auburn and get my chip. So I was really pissed at that group. I never went back to them. I still won't go back to them. I have a little resentment. So I better make a little list. Anyway, I just figured that out. Better make one list. Anyway. And then a couple years, I had a few little substitute sponsors, you know, in between that time. And then a couple years later, I found a great sponsor. And I had her for 25 wonderful years. And I just went to her funeral on Sunday. And it was a great relationship. And the only way I could describe having a sponsorship relationship that lasts that long is that it demands you to grow spiritually. It demands you to grow as a human being. And my goal as a human being now is to continue to grow spiritually in her honor. So her name was Joy, and she brought a lot of joy to a lot of people's lives. So she really lived what her name was. And I hope that I can do that as well. My goal in life is to bring that type of joy that she brought to my heart and to my life. I've been through a lot of challenges in my sobriety. Tons of challenges. You'll notice many of them. Some of you guys have never seen me before. I have a neurological disorder that many years ago I walked up without the ability to walk. I've done that twice in my sobriety with not having to learn to walk again. So not only have I learned the steps, I've actually had to learn the steps. So I got to do the steps and learn the steps. So steps and steps. So steps and steps have come in my life in physical form and spiritual form. But when that happened to me, and if it happens again, the program works in that when that happens. I apply Alcohol Anonymous tools in every area of my life. It seems that the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous, the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous, apply in my every area of my life. And it's amazing when I stand in gratitude for my well-being, my body, my life. It's good. I can't explain to you, you know, when you walk in gratitude, you can't be grateful and hateful at the same time. It's not possible. So I have a sponsor that taught me that you need to do a gratitude list. It's the ABC gratitude list. And not just ABC, we're talking A to Z. That's not really easy, especially when you get to X, Y, and Z. That's a hard one, you know. And my ABCs, ABCD, that's all that crap. When I got through the whole list, it gets long. You get pretty good after many years of doing it, and you don't just put one on it, and you get to pick as many A's as you can think of, and as many B's as you can think of, and as many C's as you can think of, and as many D's as you can think of, all the way through the xylophone. X-ray. Those are hard. Sometimes you gotta get a dictionary out, whatever it takes. You know. I was a little nervous when you called, Bill. I was like, oh man, am I gonna carry a mess or am I gonna carry a message? Because of what I'm currently going through with this crap. You know, with the remembering all this stuff, you know, I'm having post-traumatic nightmares. And you know what happens? I need to come to meetings and be honest about what's going on in my life. Because if I don't, I will drink. And it's so important, no matter what. Because you know what? All I have is today. You know, if someone got up before 6:30 this morning, you have more sobriety than I do, truly. That's how it really works. You know, we just have today. And really, really bottom line. And when I'm as emotionally fragile as I feel today, you know, I need you guys. I need you every day. And some days more than others. My very first sponsors used to tell me to look in the mirror and say, I love you. And I thought it was the worst thing she could ever say. So she would say, Mary, did you do it? And I'd lie and say, oh yeah, I've done it. And she'd ask me every day, Mary, did you look in the mirror and say, I love you? And I'd lie to her and say, oh yeah, I did it. And then she'd ask me every day. And after a while, every day I'd say, oh yeah, I did it. I'd start to feel pretty damn guilty because I was lying to her, right? And then I would look at my eyes in the, I'd catch them in my rearview mirror or something, and think about it, but I wouldn't say it. Hell no, I did not like me at all. And then I was living with a woman that I went through recovery with. And she had a little 4-year-old girl that still was not potty trained and very traumatized from her mom's addiction. Super duper high IQ. She knew words from PBS that I couldn't even pronounce. Smart kid. So I'm getting ready to, I found Young People's AA, so I was getting ready to go down to a Young People's dance, you know. I had another addiction at the time, so I was getting spruced up for a dance, you know. So I was putting on some makeup and had some hot rollers in my hair and all that stuff, and she was putting on some lipstick and some of my blush. I look over at her and I go, hey, Lauren, I go, look in the mirror and say, I love you. And she looked in the mirror, you guys, and she said, I hate you. And I was just so hurt that that little girl could say that. I could relate to her because that's exactly how I felt at that age. And I said, how come? And she goes, my mom's not here. I don't have a dad. Her list was as long as mine at that age. And then I said what my sponsor told me. If you love God and you love yourself, you'll be strong. You know what she did? She climbed up on that little counter and she started small. She went, I like you, Lauren. I like you, Lauren. And then she went like this, you know, pressing her face against the mirror. I go, what are you doing? She goes, I'm hugging myself. And then she goes, I love you, Lauren. I love you, Lauren. I love you, Lauren. And then you know what she did? She hit me in the arm and she goes, you do it. I'm like, bitch, I've never done it before. That was my first spiritual awakening in Alcoholics Anonymous. Through a little girl. Biggest teacher in AA, that little girl right there, taught me about God. Told me it was okay. She had absolutely no resistance to change. None. Zip, zip, zip. She just took it. She took it. She took that lesson plan and went, phew. I had lipstick all over the mirror from her. It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. And there are days still in my recovery? Well, I still have that problem where I can't look in the mirror and say, Mary, I love you, because I think it's still kind of corny, you know? I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to lie to you. I think that's one of the corniest things my sponsors ever taught me, but I still tell every girl I sponsor, say, I love you in the mirror, and I still have a hard time doing it myself, and I still do it, but sometimes I don't believe it. I'll be honest with you. I say it until I believe it. And there's some days I say it, and I say, you know what, I do believe it. Sometimes, yeah, you're all right. You know, and I have good days and I have bad. That's how sobriety is. You know what you do? You just don't drink it. At all. Bad days and good days. One day at a time. Breathe in, breathe out, don't drink in between the breaths. That was my dad's secret recipe. I really liked that recipe. It worked well for him. He died sober, and I like to keep that recipe and die sober myself. You know, seemed to work very well for him. One of the things that my dad taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous is that you defend people in their absence. So when you hear gossip in Alcoholics Anonymous and that person's not there, what do you do? You defend them in their absence. You say, you know, hey, they're not here. We're not supposed to talk about them. That's also known as anonymity. So we defend our people in their absence. I learned that from him. I didn't know it had to do with the steps and the traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was just a living example of the big book. And that is my goal as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because sometimes that's all we are for people. We are the only witness of Alcoholics Anonymous a person will ever see. If you're a jerk, someone may never, ever come to AA. You are the only you're the only one. You're like an advertisement for this place. So it's attraction rather than promotion. So, you know, on those bad days, I don't go out sometimes because, you know, I might be driving down the road, but, you know, with that big bird, I know I'm like that. I have that ability. You know, I do. And then on the days when I'm having a good day and I want to do that, I think maybe that person in the car in front of me's mom's dying. You know, I have different thinking process when I'm in that good space. But when I'm in that bad space, that middle finger wants to come up so fast, you know, because I am. That alcoholic thinking is there really fast. But I also have the ability to take that character defect away in the same day, because we can start our day over at any time. The book says it. I believe it. One of the things that is not shared enough in meetings, and I sure wish it was, is on the same page of that the promises are on, is where the miracle starts in Alcoholics Anonymous. It talks about how we will turn away from alcohol, we will repel from alcohol from a hot flame. And it goes on and on about we won't even be able to go, like, if we stay in, you know, spiritual condition, blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't remember it. My goal is not to be a you know, quote from the big book. But if you look on that page, I challenge you to find the miracle in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's there. It should be up next to the promises. There are more promises than just the promises on page 94. There's promises with every step. There's promises on every... If you read the book, do like my sponsor did, get a little highlighter, and go in there and look. There's a promise of every single step you take in this book, in this program. My big book looks like there's so many highlights. Every time I go to a big book study, you know what? I find something new. Remain teachable. I find something new. I'm like, jeez, I've been here for so long. I didn't know that was there. That sentence, that's new. Some new alien came down and put that in that book that's been in my life for so long. That's new. I didn't see that. Where did that come from? And when I came in Alcoholics Anonymous, I did not know how to read. I learned from the AA book. I got it on tape. I went to big book meetings, and the first book I ever learned to read was Alcoholics Anonymous book. So, for me to be able to read books today and talk to friends about reading books is exciting because, you know, staying anonymous is a big deal. And anonymity, oh, damn! When I got that word out of my mouth, that was a big deal. And when I figured out what it meant, it was even better. And when I knew what anonymous meant, a dictionary came with my big book. My sponsor gave it to me because I did not read. So that was important. So I would suggest that too. I am eternally grateful for the life that's been given to me through Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got sober, there was a tattoo artist in the recovery home, and I probably have more tattoos on me. I never got any drugs, so I got all of my tattoos in sobriety, and I got my sobriety date tattooed on me. When I did that, that was a commitment to my sobriety, because I wasn't about to relapse. Because could you imagine all the different sobriety dates I have? All these different sobriety dates. I'm like, damn, I'm gonna get a sobriety date tattooed on me. That works. I keep looking at that. I look at it. I go, I can't relapse. I'm getting a new tattoo. Look at that. That's painful. It's a painful spot. I'm not gonna get an. So that helps. I look at that sometimes. It's true. I'm not lying, dude. But I feel like I'm rambling a little bit. I could probably talk longer, but I don't want to ramble anymore. I don't want to sound like a babbling baboon or a crazy person. So if nobody has told you that they love you today, I love you. Thank you for 12-stepping me and giving me the honor of being in this room with you today. And thank you both for calling on me. And I don't know it was you. If I knew it was you, I wouldn't have answered. That's the honest God truth. You know why? Because I knew you would have asked me to be here. And I was in a funk about what's going on in my life, and I didn't think I could do it. So I'm glad you called on the phone number I didn't know, so I answered the phone. I'm just being honest. You know, I gotta be honest. But God, come clean. I'm coming clean. So, thanks for that odd number you gave me, because I have your phone number. I don't know what number you use, so thanks for tricking me. So, anyway, so is this a time I don't know if anybody has any questions. I'm more than willing to answer any questions you might have. Say again? Yes.
You mentioned having some of your extended family in recovery. Can you tell us maybe there's some funny stories or where maybe that might have been some challenges for you?
Well, some of the challenges having family in recovery is finding anonymity and finding different meetings to go to and all that, because my dad and I have four brothers in recovery, and in the town that I lived in, it was, you know, especially some of the people that I got sober were also people that abused me, and I wasn't ready to confront them, and I don't think they were ready for me to talk about it in meetings. I don't think I would ever talk about it in meetings at that point. I don't think I'd call them out anyway. You're supposed to talk in like a general way. And I think there was an issue with setting boundaries as far as, you know, I'm going to take this quadrant of Sacramento, and you take this quadrant, I'm going to go to this meeting, go to this meeting, that kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yes.
When you spoke to the song about the situation for the elevator, did you remember this day to you for a long time? One of the
doctors. Yeah, I do, actually. There's one man, there's some people in AA you just don't like. Yes, you gotta give yourself permission not to like people in here, or you'll get drunk. So, I'm telling you the truth here. That's all I'm gonna tell you. So there's this dad. He was just a perv. You know, I didn't like him. He was recovering home with me. I didn't like him. But then all of a sudden, he said something in group. He said, you know, when I listen to music, it's like God singing to me. And I don't take those love songs and think about my old lady that has left me. I think God's singing to me. And now every time I listen to music, I think about that old SOB. And I think about, I've switched music now as if it's God music. So every time I hear a song on the radio, I don't think about my partner. I don't think of that as love songs. I think of as God is talking to me. So the best gift that SOB gave me was that. It's given because it keeps me conscious with God. It helps me with my God consciousness. At the time, I didn't realize that is what he was giving me, was the gift of God consciousness, but it truly was. Not quite yet. What has happened is I was in complete denial that she was dying. I don't currently have a sponsor. I'm sponsor shopping myself, which is, it's very hard. Yeah. And one of the things, I still have my very, very first sponsor. She's there for me, and I have her. So, which, you know, I didn't mention when I was talking that when I was working the steps with her, I shared this the other night, so I didn't mention it, is that when I was working with her, prior to working the steps, I had to write in a journal every day. And being the dutiful person, I did that. And then we met weekly, and I read that to her. And sometimes I just thought she was a flat-out bitch. You know, and I would write that in my journal. Her name was Mary as well. I would write, Mary is a bitch, and I don't mean myself, I mean you. I would write that. And then we would meet, and I would read it to her, and she would just start laughing. And I go, what's so damn funny? You were, you know, because she would set boundaries with me. So what ended up happening while reading every week, as I got prepared to do my fifth step with her. It made it very easy for me to be comfortable reading feelings with her. Because I just wrote everything down. How I felt about every little SOB out there, because I was a little angry with shit. So I wrote all my anger down, everything I was angry about, and I read it to her every week. So that was very helpful, little tidbit. So anything else? I didn't hear. What am I thankful for today? Oh, you guys sitting here listening to me, and I am thankful that, to be honest with you, I'm thankful that I can stand through this whole meeting. This stool is here because I have some neurological problems and I can't stand on my feet for a very long time. So the fact that I'm able to stand through this whole meeting is a big deal. A huge deal. By about 45 minutes, I'd be falling. So this is a big deal that I can stand this long. So I'm very grateful that I can stand this long. So that some of them are physical gratitude and a lot of spiritual gratitude. I didn't hear. Neurological problems. The neurological problems forced me to work my steps even more. An analogy I like to use about the steps, if you work them enough, they work you. And it's kind of like, it's like when I learned to play the trumpet, I was horrible at it. I probably caused my parents' ears to bleed. And then when I got really good at it, I didn't have to look at sheet music. And, you know, you can improvise and you can get in a jazz band and I was in the classical symphony and I can do all that kind of stuff and play really well. It was really easy for me. And it was a piece of cake to to pick up that instrument. So it's almost like the steps become an instrument that with a lot of practice, they're easy to play. So, but they're really not a game, or not an instrument, but they're there for me. So when this crisis, this emotional, what feels like emotional crisis, first thing that happens, step started, I didn't even think about it. First thing I started doing was step stuff. It started happening, you know. Started going to more meetings, you know, up meetings, started calling people, started doing things, more things than I would normally do, started just more stuff, taking care of me, making myself a priority, taking care of myself, being nice to myself, you know, being of service, being kind to others, all that. And yeah, that magic recipe just things over. You know. I did for a while. I never went to any kind of Christian church. I went to more of a church that was similar to AA kind of thing, where it was a higher power type of situation. I would probably still go there, but there's an AA meeting at that time as well. I think that my spiritual needs get met very well with this obsessive Alcoholics Anonymous for me. That works for me. I don't want to share any opinions because they're like assholes. I'm not going to share my opinions about other stuff. And I don't want to make an ass of myself in here, so I'm not going to do that. Go on there.
So. What was the hardest step for you to complete before?
The hardest step for me to complete was one of my ninth steps. Was to make an amends to someone who had harmed me, that I felt harmed me more than they that I harmed them. One of my perpetrators. I did it anyway. I just did it. You know what they say, fake it till you make it? I just did whatever my sponsor told me to do. And I don't know if I got any relief right away from it, but I know what happened was in the long run, I have forgiven the people who have harmed me. So the gift that came from it was forgiveness. That's what came from it. And I end up having very healthy relationships with those people today. Well, one's no longer here anymore, but very healthy relationships. And a little bit of therapy before I could have that. Don't mock that. So... Yes, all of them are all still clean and sober. I have a brother that has 29 years of sobriety, and I'm the youngest, and I'll have 27, and the other ones, they're younger, they're older than me. They have less sobriety, and it pisses them off. It's the only thing I have more of. Yeah, it's funny. So I kind of, you know, that's the only thing I think that they're like, how much time do you have? I tell them, like, oh, you just, and I just kind of think it's funny. It's like family competition, you know, it's always there. It never goes away. You can't compete about sobriety. It's ridiculous, you know. Like, I'm not going to relapse so you can have more time than me. I'm sorry. It's not going to work. I won. One day at a time. What time did you get up? You won. All right. So, well, it looks like it's about time's up. If there's just one more time, one more question, and well, there's a lot of favorite AA lines, but I think there's a favorite part of the big book for me, and that is Freedom from Bondage, the first couple paragraphs. All right. Yeah. Yeah. And then I found other people that drank with me, and then I felt okay.
You said something about Ben's mind. I heard you speak one night. You said something about blocking the
street. Oh, yeah. You want me to share that analogy? Do we have enough time? Can I share that? Okay. When people talk about the committee, I call my committee a spin cycle, like a washing machine spin cycle. And you know when your washing machine's kind of offload and it spins and it goes, and you got to go in there and take some, maybe the logical person probably take maybe a couple pair of jeans out, maybe, and then take a blanket out. Not me. I just kind of move things around, and then I put the lid down, and then, you know what, 10 minutes later, you know. So that's kind of what my spin cycles are like. So I, when I'm in those kind of moods, when that's happening in my life, I need to figure out what I need to remove from my life so my life isn't spinning. You know, what kind of stresses are in my life? So I have to remove some heavy, wet jeans or some thick, wet blankets to make my life a little bit more balanced, you know, so I don't have that crazy spin cycle going on in my head. Is that what you were talking about? Okay. Thank you.